On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
It's the most important day of the year for many of our Big Fish listeners across New South Wales. It's the opening of the stream trout season in New South Wales, and they're all frothing at the mouth, champing at the bit. They've been sleeping in their waders. Don't tell me about your fetishes. Getting ready for the big day. Steve Dunn is one of them. He's up in the snowy mountains at Lake Huconbine at Aminaby. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, and you'd be able to hear the river running if I could be bothered to get out. It's so cold up here.
It's been snowing and raining and raining and snowing and sleeting and raining and snowing. But that's good, isn't it? That's good.
Yeah, look, I like a bit of snow on opening day. We're not going to get any today. I think we'll get a bit of sunshine. But for the last 2 days, it's been snowing and sleeting up on the Huconbine River, and well, I just love it when it's like that. Some of the best fishing I've had on opening day has been when everyone else has stayed in bed and I've been out there in a blizzard.
Now, hopefully they're leaving those fish alone and left them alone to spawn and do their thing pre-opening day.
Yeah, I think most people do the right thing. We had a few reports of some Victorian vehicles with fishermen in them fishing the river early. But hopefully fisheries have got onto that and seen them off. Bit disappointed at the moment, though. We don't have a dedicated fisheries officer down in the mountains. So we really need one back if anybody's listening and cares.
Gee, that'd be a good job. I'll give them a ring. Where would you be based out of? Coomer, out of Minaby, Tumut?
I think they're based out of Jindabyne.
Oh, that'd be all right. That'd be all right.
Yeah, it would.
Yes, it'd be a fantastic job. I definitely put my hand up for that. You can tell those Victorians too, can't you? They're the ones they've got meat grinders mounted on their vests. So they can just process the little...
I have no comment at all to make on that.
So they can process the sardine-sized trout on the...
Some of my best friends are Victorians.
You can tell them straight away. They've got the meat grinders on their fly vests and they just chick the trout straight in on the stream side and turn them into fish cakes. There's some very, very nice, ethical Victorians. I'm sure there are. I haven't met one yet, but I'm sure there are. look, their season's been open for a month, hasn't it?
Yes, they have. I mean, I've been reading on Flystream, been reading all about the Victorian opening, which had Bill Weigel wrote a good editorial on it because a few people declared the river fishing a bit of a disaster because not many people caught first few fish on the opening day. He tried to balance that out a bit because obviously a lot of people did. But once you start saying it's a bad opening, everyone starts repeating it and it becomes urban myth.
Well, the streams can be a bit too cold down there early season, can't they? That water temperature can play a part. But you reckon the Huconbine fish as well when the water's cold. It's got to be freezing.
Well, I remember I was fishing a small creek that ran into the Snowy River one day. It was with Phil Weigel. It was early in the season, and the water temperature was 2 degrees centigrade. It was straight snow runoff in this creek, and the fish were sitting out in the sunshine feeding like you wouldn't believe. So I have no issue, and a lot of trout, a lot of salmon fisheries are through the ice fisheries in different parts of the world, so I don't think the cold water is that big a deal for them. If they're hungry, they'll be out and about, and we'll be catching them, hopefully.
You know your trout. Why do some choose to stay up in the river and others choose to go back down to the lake?
Well, I'm a firm believer in food being a primary motivator for any fish to stay anywhere. If they're not getting food, then they'll go somewhere else and look for it. They'll move a long way to try and find a good food source. So if there's food in the streams, and you know, you would expect there to be lots of insect activity at this time of the year. So if the fish are getting a feed, then I think they'll hang on. You watch, though, in the fish that have had the rainbows that have come into the river in prime condition, ready for spawning, and another month, and a lot of them will start to look very slabby. And then all we need is one good downpour and a bit of a flush, and they all go, here we go, and they just head back to the lake. And some of the, it's one of the tragedies of opening season. If the fish have come up early and have spawned and we've had a bit of a flush, then often the fish are back in the lake before opening day. But there are always some fish that hang on. And it's my hope that there'll be one or two browns that have hung on up there, and I'll get into a couple of those as well on opening day. So, and they're all a bit dumb on opening day, let's be honest. You know, they're not tuned in to be cautious like they are later in the season when they've seen 1,000 flies. And on opening day, you would hope to pick up 10 or a dozen fish before they really wise up to what's going on.
It's the Big Fish. We're speaking with Steve Dunn in the Snowy Mountains. And the great thing about trout, and we were talking to Joe Starling the other day about getting onto the lake too early for the yellow belly when the water was still cold. And they'll just sit there, and they've got these massive fat reserves, same as the cod and other natives, and they don't need to eat for months if they want to. Trout are eating all the time, even though they get smart. If you are good enough to throw something in front of them that fools them, they'll eat it. I think that's really important to know, that you're always a chance with trout, aren't you, as opposed to Windermere and those lockjaw yellers when the water's too cold.
Yeah, I'm self-confessed non-native fisherman by choice. I like my salmon and my trout fishing, my salmonid fishing. And what you say is absolutely correct. You can go out there on the bleakest day in winter and catch the biggest fish of your life. If you can stand the conditions and you're the only person out there, there's some fantastic fish to be caught. The rainbows are a bit lean at the moment. There aren't all that many of them around, but we've had a fantastic winter for browns. I spent a lot of this winter having an English summer, so didn't get onto it that much, but some of the pictures I've seen of the fish that have come out during winter have been absolutely spectacular, both Yinvine and Eucanbean, by the way.
Well, we did talk to you late season when the sight fishing and walking the banks was as good as anywhere in the world. You even sent me some brilliant photos of fish, you know, showing themselves in the shallows. It was very Western Lakes. It was very, very good indeed. Are you hoping for that sort of summer again?
You brought back a very good memory. Early this year was exceptional. Right the way through to April, it was unbelievable sight fishing all the way around Lake Eucanbean. We had a really good cicada hatch. We had really good aquatic moths, and the fish were just in looking for them. As soon as the wind picked up, there was a bit of sun, they were in close looking for them. Lake level was fantastic. You know, it was that perfect storm of conditions that led to some amazing fishing. So if I got that again this year, I'd be a very happy person.
Yeah, just seemed to all line up, and those fish cruising the shallows, it was a sight to see, and it shows you how many fish are in there. They're a bit elusive in the deeps of the lake, aren't they, down on those deep yabby beds and other places. Sometimes the fly fishers, of course, a summer's night with a mud-eye hatch is the exception. Then you really see how many fish are in there, but sometimes they can be a bit cryptic, can't they?
They can. I mean, despite the size of Lake Eucanbean, the amount of good fishing area is quite limited. It's a lot of very, very deep water where there isn't all that much in the way of fishing at all. So you're looking for the shallower water bays. I've just come back from fishing in Ireland, and I fished on Loch Corrib, which is a massive lake, very, very similar in size to Lake Eucanbean, but the difference is that the average water depth is 7 meters. So they got an immense, you know, it's flooded valley, naturally flooded valley, and there's so much of that. It's covered in boulders and weeds, and it is an incredibly rich and fertile limestone habitat. The insect life is amazing. They have all, you know, they have caddis and they have mayfly in whole months when that's all they catch. And then the number of fish in there is just spectacular. They've got over 20 spawning streams run into that lake, the size of Lake Yukonbeen, the size of the Yukonbeen River. So the amount of spawning habitat is there is incredible. And they have this species of trout called ferox. And I use species lightly. Somebody decided 40 years ago that they were going to delist it as a species, include it as a brown trout. Now that DNA is all about, they've been able to prove that it is in fact a different species, and now they're in the process of trying to reverse that reversal. But these ferox trout live for 30 years and grow to over 30 pounds. They're massive, and they are totally piscivorous. They only eat fish. And they look different too. I mean, they look different. I've written an article about it for live stream, so you can catch it soon.
Oh, that's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Maybe we can get some of their offspring and create a fishery for those monsters. It's the Big Fish with Steve Dunn, who's having the endless summer for the fly fishers. From I fished in Ireland. I fished this beautiful loch down near the Ring of Kerry, down south at a place called Waterford, actually. And it was a beautiful loch, and I'm in the clinker boat with the ghillie, and he had the little white stone house on the hill overlooking the loch, you know, and he's such a lovely bloke. And I was married. I've been married for you know, many, many years to my dearest darling Catherine, who I love very much. And I was on my own over there, and we had a great time on the loch. I was casting well, got a couple of pulls, but they weren't moving. There'd be no spate. They need that spate, don't they? And yep. He said, "Would you like to come up to the cottage?" I said, "Oh, yes, and come and have a cup of tea." And I've gone up there, and I've had a lovely cup of tea, and his daughter brought out a lovely cake, and you know, I got to talking to him, introduced me to his daughter, and it was very nice. And I got back to the hotel, and the barman said, "Oh, how'd you go up with the fishing?" I said, "Oh, very good." He said, "Did he introduce you to his daughter?" I said, yes, he did, actually. And it only cost me 30 quid to fish. I knew a bloke who sort of knew a bloke, and I got a cheap deal, you know, because I didn't have much money. And he said, "Oh, he's been trying to marry her off to a rich fisherman for many years." And I thought, you know, I've never considered bigamy, but I thought that would be a terrific gig.
Right, okay.
You know, because you become the ghillie, you'd be the ghillie's son-in-law, you'd have this beautiful place to fish every day and live in the cottage.
I could tell you one thing. So when the Irish, when we say, "Did you catch anything?" you say, "Oh, no, I didn't get anything, but I had a couple of hits." The Irish say, "No, but I met a few."
Yeah, it was lovely. It was such a lovely guide. You know, we're in this clinker boat and he's rowing, and I'm using this big rod and a team of flies. And I didn't know what I was doing. You know, we're doing lock style, and I'd never done it. And he was really reassuring. He said, "Oh, you're doing it well. You cast well, boy. You know, you're a very good caster, and you're doing it right. You just know the fish weren't going to bite." And he was really realistic. He said, "They're not going to bite, but you're doing really well." So it was lovely. I just thoroughly enjoyed the countryside and the experience. But that place, Corrib, I saw a documentary about that, and I haven't been there, but they actually fish giant live mayflies. These fellows go into the bush and catch mayflies and put them into a box, and people hook them on and dap them.
Yes, I've heard this, yeah.
Which is incredible, to put a little hook through. They must be big mayflies.
I've heard the same story, whether it's true or not.
No, I saw an old documentary where the fellows had a little wooden box, and they went through the bushes around the stream with a net, and then they put them in the box, and they sold them to the fishermen. They went out in the boat, they put them on a blower line, and they dapped them and caught the big trout. I mean, that's a pretty realistic fly, Steve Dunn.
Yes, it is.
So there must be a prolific mayfly, you know, factory.
Yeah, April apparently is mayfly month. I mean, there are mayfly, you know, there's always mayflies on a mayfly lake, but apparently it goes crazy in April on mayfly. So I have definitely would like to go back. A very strong desire to go back and have a crack at that.
Well, if you want to have a look at that, there's an old BBC documentary from 1968 called Anglers Catching Mayflies for Fishing Loch Corrib in County Galway. And they go out in the old clinker boats and they actually hook them onto a hook.
I will have a look at that. There's one thing I can tell you is I won't be fishing a mayfly on Newcombe Bean today.
No. And how did you go on Loch Corrib? How did you go before we get back to?
Oh, yeah, we did very well. I didn't get the big one that threatened to drag me out of the boat. But no, it was a fantastic day. I love lake fishing, as you know, it's very much my preference. And Loch Corrib, I mean, I can't believe this, but it just seems difficult to believe. But apparently, small and large, there are over 3,000 islands in the lake. A lake the size of Lake Ucombe with 3,000 islands in it.
And you were lock style fishing, drifting along?
Lock style fishing. And not dapping, but stripping a big dry on a top dropper and two wets behind it. The big dry, it was a claret dabbler.
A carrot, and that's a bob
around. They don't, there's none of this gentle stuff. They strip them back, and the dabbler creates a fair bit of commotion on the surface. So it's an interesting technique, one I've yet to give a good go over here.
That'd have to work.
I will give it a try.
That'd have to work. So, and it was quite a quick strip, was it?
Oh, fast trip, yeah. Because you're fishing over shallow water all the time, so none of this sinking line nonsense. You start off on the island in about a metre of water, and you drift towards the next island, and at some point you'll be in 3 or 4 metres of water, but then you're drifting back up into shallower water again, and the water is gin clear, so the fish have no problem seeing what's going on up there. They're looking up all the time. A lot of terrestrials playing on the water. Daddy long legs are a big thing over there. They all fit. There's 1,000 daddy long leg patterns they've got over there.
Yeah.
Not in summer, we look nothing like daddy long legs to
have
me.
Have you had a hatch of those up in the high country in the Snowies?
No, I haven't.
Well, I didn't know we had them. I saw a hatch of them on 3 Mile a few years back, and they came out like they were like the B-52s of the insect world. They're just monstrous things, like a Jurassic Park mosquito. And they were on 3 Mile Dam one evening. They came out in numbers, and the fish went for them too. But I did have one in the box with a knotted her legs and things. They're a funny looking fly, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got one. I tied one up last year because someone was saying they were getting them on the Nutties, but I've never seen a fall of daddy long legs or a hatch of daddy long legs. What do you call it? A fall, I suppose. They must be. They're terrestrial, aren't they? Not aquatic.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I
thought they were a Northern Hemisphere thing. I thought they were an English or Irish or Scottish thing, dapping the daddy. But I saw this hatch of them. I think they're called the crane fly, aren't they?
Yeah, crane fly.
Yeah, that was a 3 Mile dam.
Yet another fly I won't be fishing today.
No. Well, it's a long time off those long summer evenings with rising fish. But what techniques would you use on the Ucombe Bean?
Most of my dry flies today have got a 4 mil tungsten bead on the head.
So you'd be down deep. We're doing a bit of the Euronymphing or?
Yeah, no, I'll Euronymph all day. I will certainly fish a squirmy worm. I think there's, I know that some fly fishermen squirmy worm is only marginally better fly than a glow bug, but they are extremely effective, especially with all the water that's in the river at the moment. They are a very good fly, so I'll be fishing a squirmy worm for part of the day, and apart from that, just 2 or 3 nymphs. See how the mood takes, see how the fish are fishing, but black and green nymphs usually do the trick. Bit of UV tide in them, a lot of bloody great big bead to get them down there. I was speaking to Cole Sinclair in the week, and he's been monitoring the river conditions. Last week he said he wouldn't have been able to cross the river down at Denison It was coming through there at the bank level, and it would have been far too much water flowing across the river. So hopefully it's dropped back just a little bit from that. I'd like to be able to cross, pick the place I want to go. I'd like to be able to cross the river a couple of times. If not, then you'll need all the lead and all the tungsten you've got just to be able to get down into the zone.
That's where
I'll spend a bit of time fishing an indicator in some of the slower pools. The takes can be so cryptic if you're not fishing an indicator it's just nice to relax a bit and not have to don't have to figure it out by touch. There's a couple of places I know I'll be using a big indicator. Apart from that, all euro nymphing.
Yep. Down deep, that's where they are. Well, it's going to be a good season. I mean, the snow was so welcome. That fills up the lake. Where is the lake level at the moment?
So it's just over 40%. So we're still almost 10% off where we were this time last year. But it is looking absolutely magnificent. If in geographic terms, it's almost up to the lake is almost back to where the portal comes in from Providence, up at Providence. So it's going to be fantastic, and I think it'll continue to come up. Whether we'll match last year, I don't know. I don't think we've had enough to do that, but hopefully it will come up. I tell you what I did. I went up and had a fish up at Tantangra this week. That's the first time I've been up there for almost 2 years. Apart from the fact it looks like a mine site on the Pilbara, it's a bit of a mess up there. And they're creating a new mountain with all the diggings they're taking out of the hole.
That's a snowy 2.0. Yeah, the digging
snowy
a hole.
2.0.
So were the fish good?
It was a beautiful day up there, and I dropped the fish two casts in. I dropped the fish, which was a surprise. I mean, I hadn't gone out there for a look, really. I hadn't really expected the fishing to be fantastic. But they've had, the reports I've been having is they've had a big algal bloom up there. And there's been this green water. The lake has been dropping quite a lot. And that algae, of course, has all been left on the bank, been blown up onto the banks. But when it's dried white. It looks like there's a, 10 meter strip of snow all the way around the lake.
Wow, that's really bizarre, isn't it?
I know it is. So I don't know what kind of algae it is, but they've had that's been a bit of an issue. But the water was beautiful and clear. No sign of any algae. The fish played, caught a couple, met a couple, it was only up there for 3 or 4 hours, but it was great. Oh, and I felt all day, I felt like I was going to fill the boat with fish. That was the kind of conditions it was like.
Excellent. Might all go well for the upper Murrumbidgee as well, because the cormorants have been giving that area a bit of a flogging, but maybe the tunnel diggers have scared them away.
Well, what I can tell you was that the one thing I noticed around all the buildings, all the construction site area, there were hundreds of Brumbies there. I think the Brumbies know where they're safe to go with their human beings, and no one will shoot them.
right.
There were hundreds of Brumbies around the diggings, but what I didn't see was any cormorants. I had a trip up to Eucanbeen last week, I had a trip up to Tanga this week, and I didn't see a cormorant anywhere. So I suspect that Lake Eyre is having a bit of an impact on that. Apparently there's a lot of water out west at the moment. So same with the pelicans. Didn't see a pelican either.
No. So many fly fishers would hope they stay out there.
I think they would, yes. They certainly get a bad rap, don't they?
yeah. But anyway, they're a native animal. The Tasmanians have had a bit of a battle with them. But look, it's all sounding really good for opening day. I think a lot of people will hit the streams around the New England Tablelands, Gloucester and Barrington Tops. There are streams right along the range. Anywhere where there's water over 1,000 meters, you'll catch trout. And of course, the Snowy Mountains is the mecca. Steve, thanks for such a great report, and thanks for telling us about your wonderful trip to Loch Corrib as well. I'll send you a link to anglers catching mayflies for fishing on Loch Corrib in 1968. It's the funniest video you'll ever see.
Thank you very much, Scott. And apart from the fact you probably cost me 5 fish sitting in the car chatting to you, I'll now go and catch them.
Get in. The gun's gone off. You're allowed to fish. Tight line, Steve.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Back on deck after a bad sausage. I tell you what, the 11-year-old kid who you put in to deputise for you, what a gun. What a gun. We're going to talk to him in just a moment because he said he'd feed the family when they got there. We'll see if that was a big, big call because he was only walking on the beach and throwing a few soft plastics. But I hear he's pretty good, Maxie Evans.
Look. What pleases me? Oh, let me tell you something, all our listeners, and I've been had a lot of requests as to what's going on, Stinker, and I still got a bit of a snorkel in my voice, I know. But I would make everybody aware out there who has a problem with allergy, and that's my issue, an allergy to sulfite, which is a preservative. Now, I come out second best when I ate two sausages, which had plenty of preservative in them, and it's reacted to me very poorly. So that's why I've been off air for a couple of weeks, and I'm just starting to scramble back now. But as you just said, what better backup could I have than an 11-year-old kid? Now, and this pleases me so much, because I see it far too often that kids just don't move. We all remember the previous generation. We were always on the move. And now there's an emergence of these young kids like young Evans who there's just not enough hours in the day. And that's how it should be. He's out and about and he's all his mates are the same. And from the sun up to sundown, they're either climbing rocks or running along the beach or chasing fish or diving in or surfing. I mean, that's what it's all about, this life business.
What a little champion. We'll catch up with him and his poppy Bruce in just a bit, who's a terrific bloke as well. But they never go short of a feed of fish. And I said to poppy Bruce, I said, you'd better, as soon as you get there, put the fry pan on, because I reckon this kid's going to come good with the promise. Hey, Stinker, it's the long weekend. It's a school holidays. What could you do in your neck of the woods if you want the kids to do the same as young Max?
Well, just about everything I listed before. There's so much to do here. It is just a paradise for families, and they're rolling in. I mean, heavens above, it's like the big circus has arrived in town. I don't think there's any accommodation. It's booked out. It's standing room only. But we're a very, very welcoming community because we're a holiday community, and this is our lifeblood. And so it's to our advantage to be welcoming, and we genuinely are. But that's only half of it. The other half of it is you've got to have things to entertain families when they arrive. And we've got every single thing. I mean, if you've got a boat, there you go. If you have got your bike, well, there's plenty of good bike tracks. If you've got your joggers, well, you can walk along all the walking tracks. I mean, it's just got everything's going for it. And the fish... Well, at the moment, the place is lousy with salmon. Well, you know what I think of salmon. But a lot of people like winding them in for some unknown reason. But anyway, that's what they do. Well, there's no shortage of salmon. You'll catch them right in front of the lighthouse. If you want somewhere to go, Stinker's tip for the week, go out in front of the lighthouse at Fingal and tow a lure. And hang on, that's the thing.
Well, you make all the fish cakes, so you could feed the whole caravan park, Stinker.
That's right. I should have a store down at the surf club, actually. Stinker's Fish Cakes.
Clean up.
You should have told me this last week. I'd have gone and got a bag of spuds and a big pot. I could have made a fortune. I'll have to wait till Christmas now.
Hey, Stinker. I just thought of something. You've got the beautiful caravan park there. I used to go there with my girlfriend when I was a young bloke at school. Her dad had a caravan. We had a lot of fun. But that beach, Fingal Beach, why is it so white? Why is it so beautiful? Why is the water so blue? It's quite different to the colour of the sand at Stockton Beach just down the road, for example.
Yeah, but it's not much different from Box Beach and Zenith Beach. Don't go on Zenith Beach. Zenith Beach is too dangerous. But no, there's nothing really all that much different to it. It's beautiful sand. Beautiful, beautiful sand. But as you say, the sea, because there hasn't been any rain event for a while, the sea is becoming bluer every day. And once it gets really, really opal blue and you get the top of the tide around Shoal Bay, oh, when you drive along the road and you look out through the heads and you see that opal blue water and that crystal sand, the white sand, you think, wow, this, you know, I'm never going to Hawaii again as long as I live.
Well, it's Stockton, Stockton Beach sand anyway on Waikiki. They take it over in ships. And what about the bread and butter species like the bream and the whiting on the beaches around your area? Yep. Are they starting to move in?
Yep. They're coming for the summer months. And it's normally the caravanners in the caravan park at Anna Bay and Fingal that really cotton onto the whiting, because they do it every year. They go down the beach, they catch a few worms, and then they set themselves up, walk across the road onto the beach past the surf club, catch a dozen beautiful whiting, and home they go. I'm thinking, how good. I mean, what a great place to come for a holiday. I only have one holiday. It starts in 1st of January and ends on the 31st of December.
Oh, Stinker, it's so good that you're coming good. That really knocked you for six, that the sulfites in those snags. So it's lovely to hear from you. And we're going to see how Bruce Evans and Maxie Evans went now. Your little mate who deputised for you last week, he came in off the bench for our beloved Stinker. But it's great to have you back, mate.
Oh, look, and I'm so pleased to hand my rod and reel over to that young bloke, because he's the future, mate.
Tight lines, buddy.
Hello.
It's the Big Fish, and young Max Evans, who's 11, had to deputise for Stinker last week. He's from Port Stephens, and Stinker reckons he's the next gun fisho in the port. I mean, someone's got to take the mantle from Stinker. And Max was heading to Iluka, and we spoke to Max and his grandfather, Bruce. The last thing I said to Bruce was, get the skillet ready, get the frying pan and the oil out, because I reckon Max is going to bring you some nice flathead fillets when you get there.
Spot on there, Scott. Oh, you've got it exactly right. I won't ruin his thunder.
All right, let's put him on. Good morning, Max.
Hello.
G'day, Max. You stopped at Nabiak last Saturday morning, and we spoke to you about going to Iluka. You were really excited. What happened when you got there?
It was really low tide of onshore wind, and I had to walk out like 100 metres, like onto the flats. And then on like fourth cast, I got a 56 centimetre flatty.
Fourth cast?
Yeah.
Tell us about your rig.
Oh, I was using, I think it was, I don't know what size jig head it was, but I was using a Bait Junkie 2-inch soft plastic. And I was using my 3000 flick reel and just a flick rod.
Did you give you a bit of fun? That's a pretty decent flathead, 56 centimetres. It looked bigger than that in your hands, because you are only little.
Yeah.
Because I've got the photo. I'm going to put the photo up. So Papa Bruce is unloading the car and getting into the unit. You've walked across to the beach or to the river, gone out to the flats and pulled a 56 centimetre flathead fourth cast.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. How good was it to eat?
Oh, it was pretty good. And then the next morning, my uncle went out and he caught a 65, and we brought that home too. We had flatty for dinner, fish and chips.
How good is flatty for dinner?
Yeah.
It's the best, isn't it?
Yeah, not the best, but it's pretty good.
What do you like?
My favourite's probably like whole brim.
Really? So a whole brim, yeah. What, in the microwave or in the oven? How do you like it done?
In the oven.
Yeah, they're very soft and moist in the oven, aren't they? Beautiful. Yeah. Wrapped in foil with a bit of lemon, and it just melts in your mouth, doesn't it? Brim done that way is very, very nice.
Yeah.
And you did catch a few other fish?
Oh, we caught 2 brim off the beach.
Good size?
Yeah, legal, and we had them in the oven.
How does it make you feel when you help to feed the family when you're on a fishing holiday at Iluka?
Oh, pretty good.
It's a good feeling, isn't it? You know, you feel like you've contributed.
Yeah.
You get a bit proud, don't you? Because you're the hunter-gatherer. You're the man.
Yeah. We fed 7 people.
Fed 7?
With 2 flatties, 2 big ones.
Yeah.
And I think we had some chips. And we got some extra ones from the fish and chip shop.
So you got the chips, but you didn't have to get the fish because you'd already caught fish much fresher than anything they had.
Oh, we got a couple, a bit more, because we didn't have enough, but
we
didn't have to buy much.
Yeah, but I bet your flathead was the favourite.
Yeah.
Hey, Max, we're going to keep talking to you. You're a beauty, and people can have a look at that flathead. I'll put it up on the podcast page. It's a good-looking fish, and it'll look bigger than 56, actually. It looked around 65, but excellent lizard. Of course, you've got to let them go after 70 anyway, so just perfect eating size. Max, thanks for having a chat with us.
That's all right.
Good to talk to you, mate, and all the best to Poppy Bruce.
Yeah.
Tight lines, buddy. See ya. Thanks, Bruce. He's a champion.
Oh, it was so nice. It's just nothing like fresh fish. When your grandson catches it and helps cook it and clean it, it was terrific.
And how
it was
quick?
So good.
And how quick was it? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I couldn't believe it. I don't think I had the first bag out of the car, and he walked back.
And it's a big,
taking this big fish.
It's a big flatty. It's a nice flathead.
It was a smoker. It was a good one.
And you bought the fresh chips from the fish and chip shop to go with it.
Yeah.
And
easy
to cook. You just fry it up in the pan. Bit of flour, crispy.
Yeah. I think we were talking to you afterwards, and you don't overdo it, do you? That's the secret.
So take it off before it's cooked in the middle, and let it finish in its own residual.
It's easy to dry out.
Oh, yeah, take it off while it's still a bit pink in the middle. That's my tip.
Yeah.
Oh, good on you, Bruce. He's a little champion, mate, and didn't he live up to all of the hype? Tight lines,
I'll see
buddy.
What he brings home this weekend.
Yeah, keep feeding Poppy Bruce. Tight lines, mate.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And, of course, it's the opening of the trout season for the streams in New South Wales this weekend. A lot of people will be heading east of Tumbarumba, Coleraine, up to Eucombeen as well, to the Central West, over the New England Ranges, to the Ebor, Walker area. It's on everywhere.
The fish are so many you cannot place a number. A clear mountain stream just east of Tumbarumba. Pure mountain snow and the water runs clear. Way up in the mountain when no one comes near. Thank you.
vacation. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. East of Tumberumba, my favorite little fishing spot. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. East of Tumberumba, my favorite little fishing spot.
Take plenty of layers if you're heading to the Snowies. They're living up to their name on The Big Fish. Our first cast this morning with Steve Dunn at Eucanbeen as well, if you want to know what's going on around that amazing trout fishing lake. Of course, the opening of the fly fishing season for the streams. Well, you can catch them on worms as well, if you want to. Catch them any way you can, The Big Fish. And coming up in just a moment, David Witham with a new chapter of Ozfish Unlimited, doing some great things. And we'll also have a look at an Aussie lure that's catching the giant flathead. It's a monster of a thing.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and I'm at the tackle shop, where I should get a bed. They've got a camping section. Maybe Dave Witham from the Central Coast chapter, Ozfish Unlimited, could roll out a swag for me. But this is the kid in the candy shop. We'll talk about some of the tackle innovations in just a moment, because it's a great accessory sport, fishing, as well. There's so much good stuff to experiment with and muck around. And we're going to talk about an Australian innovation in just a moment. But this new chapter of Ozfish Unlimited for your region, the Central Coast. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, okay. So it recently created chapter, which was, we split up the Hawkesbury Nepean chapter into Central Coast, given that we're a big part of the Hawkesbury system. So we have a chapter where we're going to focus on habitat restoration around Brisbane waters, Tuggera Lakes, and tributaries that empty into those systems. And we've already started with cleanups. We're going after funding to do a thing called Pimp My Jetty, which is basically putting snags under people's jetties to try and attract crustaceans, oysters, all those sorts of things, and then in turn bring the fish in. So,
and it's all sort of organic stuff, isn't it? It's worked very well. I think that's a good thing, being probably a little later to the party to be an Ozfish chapter, is they've got these tried and true programs like Pimp My Jetty, which really has proven to work, and it's nice organic stuff that doesn't clog the waterway, and the jetty owners and the public wharves like it too, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. You know, most people that have a jetty enjoy a bit of fishing as well, so, you know, it's in their interest to try and improve the habitat for the fish to actually come into. So, yeah, it's
that's right. The
really
fish are right under their feet.
Yeah.
A lot of people make that mistake, don't they, casting 100%. Right out?
Yeah, 100%. Brim especially, they'll be hanging around the pylons of the jetty, whereas you see a lot of jetty owners, you know, out in the middle of the thing, which is fine for flathead and stuff, but if you're looking for the big brim, they're going to be right at your feet.
Exactly right, exactly right. Yep. That's funny, isn't it? The people fishing on the shore are casting way out, and the people fishing the boats are casting
inwards, it's always, always intrigues people to sort of think that. But, yeah, a lot of the people in the boats know where the fish are going to be hanging. So
absolutely. And you've organised a big Gone Fishing Day.
Yeah, so working with DPI, we're having a Gone Fishing Day on October the 19th down on the waterfront at Gosford next to the Sailing Club. So
good spot.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of passing traffic. And the whole idea is to try and encourage more people into fishing, and from Ozfish's perspective, spread the word about fish habitat and fish habitat restoration. We rely, you know, pretty much 100% on volunteers. So the more people involved, the more we get done, and the better the habitat and better the fishing on the Central Coast.
And I guess, too, wherever you go, there'll be a chapter of Ozfish now. They're on the North Coast, they're in the Northwest, they're in the Southwest, they're in Queensland, they're in Western Australia, everywhere, that you'll have friends to connect with.
Yeah, so there's 22 chapters in New South Wales alone.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm actually on the New South Wales Fish Habitat panel as well, and we've got people from around the whole of New South Wales working together on projects that we can potentially do across the state rather than individual chapters. So, yeah, there's plenty of interest, and, you know, the good thing is it's all like-minded fishermen. You know, people think Ozfish, they think, oh, it must be a bunch of greenies, but we're not. We're all people that are 100% fisherman and interested in the environment when it comes to fishing. So,
as our old mate John Humphreys, who sadly has gone to the big river in the sky, used to say, habitat makes fish happen, Scott.
Yes, 100%. And that's 100% the mantra is, you know, without the habitat, we don't have the fish. And, you know, over the last 100 years, and especially on the Central Coast, we've managed to wipe out somewhere around 90 to 98% of the fish habitat.
So, yeah, so and the good thing is it can come back, can't it? It's been tried and true. Yeah. Some of those projects with reef and seagrass have been quite successful, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the things we'll look at here is the seagrass. They're kicking it off in Lake Macquarie this year, and we'll follow suit once we get an idea of how effective that is. They've done a lot of that in Western Australia. And on the reef side of things, the shellfish reefs, they've been doing that in Moreton Bay. So they've done hectares and hectares of shellfish reef, and we will look at doing the same sort of thing here. We've lost a lot of the oyster leases in Brisbane waters over the years. So we will look to, put some shellfish reef in to sort of replace that and bring the brim back into the system.
Great habitat. It's the Big Fish. We're speaking with Dave Witham from the Central Coast chapter of Ausfish Unlimited. And Dave, you also moonlight in the tackle shop, as many of our regulars on the Big Fish do. And we're standing right in front of some lures that were made by a really innovative Australian. You love the new stuff. I mean, it is a great accessory sport, a great gadget sport. But these things are another level. They're called paddle glide baits. And they're a huge soft bait with internal weighting and giant hook system, and they'd be a good almost 30 centimetres long, 25 centimetres.
225 mils, yeah. So, they're really good. He's got a range of these. The guy that's put all these together is a school teacher on the Gold Coast. The idea with these is ideal for targeting those really big flathead on the flats at high tide. They sink slowly and they sink flat, and really have the silhouette of like a mullet or a garfish up on the flats, which we know the big flathead like. But for jewfish, cod, barramundi, you know, these things are perfect.
And they look like they've got the paddle tail, which always gives a really good natural swimming action. So what would the retrieve be? I mean, these things are huge.
Yeah, so these things, like if you're fishing for flathead, you cast it out, you wind it for about a metre and just let it slowly sink back down. And then just rinse and repeat.
Yeah. I tell you what, the Mulloway would like them, wouldn't they?
Yes, 100%. And they come with a 1 ounce jig head, so you can get them down into the deeper water for the Mulloway.
Yeah. And the fact that they have that natural profile when they sink, they don't go nose down or tail down, because a normal fish doesn't do that.
Yeah. So that's the big thing. I think that's the thing that's really going to be effective on a lot of the larger fish, is it's a natural sink.
Yeah, wow, there's an innovation. The paddle glide in potty mullet or other colours, and it's a monster thing, 20-plus centimetres long with a big set of giant gangs at the back and a single hook at the top.
Trebles,
I should say. Yep. Wow, that's a pretty serious lure.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, the guy that brings them out... well practiced in catching the big flathead. So
have you seen that the blokes who are using drones now to see them?
I mean, yeah. That's extraordinary. Some of the footage is incredible when you see the big flathead come up behind the glide bait and just hammer it.
Let them all go now too. It's just fantastic. We're seeing good results of that. A lot of flathead in the systems of late.
Yeah, no, it is certainly improving since they brought in that limit of 70 centimetres. So all the breeders are getting there, and we'll start to see a lot more. And certainly through Brisbane waters, we're seeing a lot of flathead, and a lot of juvenile flathead, which is really good.
Yeah, nice to see that. Dave, good luck with the Ausfish chapter for the Central Coast of New South Wales. Good luck with Gone Fishing Day, October 19, next to the Sailing Club, Brisbane Water. I'm sure a lot of locals will pop in and say good day and have a chat and maybe even catch a fish.
Yep. Yeah. No, thanks for that, Scott. Yeah, looking forward to it. And, hopefully the more the merrier.
She sits on a dock of fish in the water. I don't know her name. She's a fisherman's daughter. Come on down. Come on down.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.